From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
You'll know my next guest, Mike McIntyre, is a syndicated radio host with the Crime and Punishment radio show on the Ralco and Chorus radio networks, also a crime reporter for the Winnipeg Free Press. He has a website, mikeoncrime.com. He has a cruise called the Bondage Cruise, or I forget what it's called. We'll have to talk about that a little bit. And I understand he's going to be hosting the Canadian version of Dancing with the Stars. No, I'm kidding about that, too.
My wife did sign me up, actually, for dance classes with her a few years ago. It was an unmitigated disaster.
You know what?
Things we do for our spouses.
Absolutely. And it's called the 2010 Ultimate Caribbean Cruise. Last time I had you on, you were just going on it. That's happened already.
And actually, we're already planning, Dana. We get done one vacation and on to the next one. We're actually going to do Hawaii
Wow.
in 2011. We've got a 14-day extravaganza planned for Hawaii, which I've actually never been out that way, so looking forward to that. And already have sold a bunch of cabins, and this is going to prove, I think, to be perhaps our most popular one yet. Everybody loves Hawaii, especially when you put up with the Canadian winters that we tend to have, although the winters seem to be getting a little better lately.
Absolutely. You know, I've interviewed Dog the Bounty Hunter many times on this program.
He's not going to be on our cruise, by the way.
Yeah, but I'd love to see you on that show out doing a bounty, you and Beth going down the street.
I just got my hair cut the other day. Until then, I probably had hair that was about as long as Dog's,
yeah.
Although not necessarily in the same mullet fashion.
But wow.
We would have made a good team.
I was fortunate enough to guest on your program the other day, and we actually teased a little bit as far as tonight's show that you were going to guest on here, and I was going to ask you your thoughts on Prime Minister Harper. We don't often hear this from politicians. Actually, although this government have been better than most, a politician stepping up and saying, we've got a prisoner in jail who's receiving a pension, and I don't think he should be getting it. We're talking about Clifford Olson. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, there's actually, the latest is that there's an online petition that's burning up the internet right now. I think as of earlier Tuesday, there was about 17,000 signatures on it. But Clifford Olson is being singled out because he's Clifford Olson. The fact of the matter is there's about 500 Canadian inmates who are currently collecting a pension. And, you know, Clifford Olson would be at the top of that list of cases that would shock and horrify, I think, all of us. $7 million a year is how much is being paid to these approximate 500 prisoners. And, you know, I guess the first thing is, not in Canada especially, not a lot of prisoners are still behind bars when they are old enough to be collecting old age security. And that's why that number is what it is, 500. In Olson's case, he's actually collecting both old age security and something called guaranteed income supplement. He's actually cashing in pretty big. I think I read the other day that well over $1,000 a month is coming his way. That can buy you a lot of smokes in prison. I'm not sure actually what's happening with the money that he's getting. I guess it's being put into a fund, and I don't know if it's going to family members, but the fact of the matter is that a convicted serial killer like Clifford Olson, the fact he's getting one red cent of essentially our money has a lot of people in this country very upset, and rightfully so.
Absolutely. It makes perfect sense. And, you know, I never thought of that as far as the amount of prisoners, but in Canada, not often do you see a prisoner in jail for that long. That's something we could talk about on another program. But if you compare us to the States and look at one of the biggest stories in the States, O.J. Simpson and the Goldmans going after everything that O.J. has, although they're not allowed to touch his pension. Have we ever seen or have you ever covered a case in Canada, Mike, where the victim's family goes after the person who's convicted of taking their loved one or whatever?
if for whatever reason you just do not see those kind of lawsuits in this country, I'm not sure why that is necessarily. Not sure why they wouldn't be successful, because as you say, I mean, the Simpson case is perhaps the most famous, where the criminal charge never stuck, but certainly the civil case where they were able to go after them for some big money, that did stick big time. So in that, you know, I don't know why in Canada we haven't seen that sort of thing. We just are not a litigious country in the way that the Americans are, that's for sure. And it's interesting you mentioned sort of older criminals. In fact, in the United States, where they house their criminals a lot longer, and there's a lot more of them, of course, than in Canada, they're actually now dealing with the issue of what to do with all these elderly inmates. In fact, they're building special prisons in the States that are, in essence, geriatric wards. They're specifically designed to house elderly and perhaps dying prisoners, because that's the reality of the U.S. But as you say, in Canada, we don't see that very often. Even though the maximum and the mandatory sentence for a murder is life, there's always parole eligibility. In Canada, there's no such thing as never have the chance at parole. And other than the exceptions like the Clifford Olsons, who will never get out on parole because of the sheer volume of his crime, most inmates eventually do get out, and therefore this doesn't become an issue.
Mike McIntyre is here, and we're talking about most recently the Canadian government, in particular Prime Minister Harper, bringing up the issue of federal prisoners collecting pensions from the government. Have we heard any more about the government and what they're planning on doing? I know they've said they're looking into it.
Yeah, I think, you know, certainly there's going to be pressure on them big time to respond to this. As I said, this isn't anything new, and Clifford Olson hasn't, you know, been granted some kind of exemption, but I think his case and the fact it's become very public will certainly put some pressure on a government that has proven in the past that it is very responsive to public pressure. I suppose critics would say that the Canadian government is too responsive to public pressure, and that they've, you know, enacted legislation as a knee-jerk reaction to some of the criticisms from the general public. But, you know, I don't know if anything can be done about Clifford Olson. I suppose they could always bring about sweeping new legislation that would end it immediately. And this wouldn't be the first time we've seen this happen. I can think to a case that just came up in Saskatchewan over the last recent while. A man who was in prison for the death of his wife, and ultimately wrote a book about it. He's now been released on parole and has still maintained his innocence. He was going to be cashing in on any proceeds and profits that his book made. There was no legislation at the time in Saskatchewan to prevent that, but the government in Saskatchewan, and of course this isn't federal now, this is provincial, but they acted very quickly and made sure that he will not be cashing in on any money his book makes, and I suppose we could see a similar reaction at a federal level in the Olson case.
Yeah, we're talking about Colin Thatcher, my old hockey coach, by the way, many moons ago, and that's another story for another time, but I shared it with Maggie Siggins many years ago, and whether she used my story or not, I'm not sure. Mike McIntyre is here, and we're talking a little bit of everything. Of course, Mike's website is mikeoncrime.com, and there's an interesting article. I'm just looking at your webpage right now, and we're going to talk about it as I click on it. And it's from the Associated Press from Cleveland. It says, man fleeing police jumps a fence right into a prison yard. What happened there?
Stupidity happened there, and unfortunately for criminals, but I would say fortunately for those of us who can sit back and kind of laugh at this, the world seems to be populated with dumb criminals. Feature these kinds of stories, it seems like, with regularity on my website. We actually have a lighter side of the law section, which on some days there's more of those stories than, I guess, the darker side of the law, and maybe that's a good thing. But yeah, this happened in Cleveland. He tried to flee officers. It was a high-speed chase, in fact. It all started with just a traffic violation, and so many of these cases start with something minor. turn into something major. And I guess this guy decided that he was going to turn into a biathlete and make a run for it. And he's leaping over fences and you name it. And all of a sudden, there he was, finding himself trapped inside the yard of a state women's prison. and obviously not a lot of place to run to once he was in there. And here's my concern, Dana.
Yeah.
If it's that easy to jump in
the
prison yard, what does that say about how easy it is to jump out of said prison yard?
Exactly. Wow, what a wild story. You know, again, last time that you and I talked, we were talking about an interesting case with a police officer and a prosecutor who had a little bit of a fling, we should say, an important drunk driving case. Kind of went out the window because of it. Some charges were laid. Have you got an update on that?
Yeah, actually, there's some finality to the case, and as you say, it involves a bit of a troublesome breakup between two very public professionals, an RCMP officer and a Crown attorney who had a very brief fling while both were working out in a particular part of the province of Manitoba back in 2008. It did not end well, very ugly and messy breakup that led to all kinds of allegations actually on both fronts, from her against him and from him against her. Ultimately, a decision was made to charge him with criminal harassment. It is very important to note that a charge of criminal harassment is kind of a unique charge in the Canadian Criminal Code. It's not based on any single act, and in fact, as the judge pointed out last week in giving her verdict, criminal harassment is essentially a series of legal acts that, you know, compounded on top of each other form the basis of a criminal allegation. That is to say, if you threaten to kill someone, that, you know, or to beat someone, that's not criminal harassment. That's uttering threats, and there's a charge for that. If you physically lay a hand on someone in a domestic relationship, well, there's a charge for that. If you stalk someone, there are charges that can address that. So criminal harassment is pretty unique, and as such, it's actually quite difficult to prove. Not surprisingly, at least to me, who covered every minute of this trial, the judge ruled last week that there was no criminal conduct here. Certainly ruled that the police officer behaved very poorly in flooding this Crown attorney ex-girlfriend with all kinds of unwanted emails and angry texts and phone calls and messages. But at the end of the day, ruled that no laws were broken here. And unfortunately, I guess for everyone involved in this sordid mess, this all got aired out in public. And I think the end of the day, certainly both come out of this not looking so good.
Yeah, and unfortunately, there was a criminal case involved, and it's just sad. You know, you got to be professional, do your job. Other things do happen, but
well, and in that sense, it's actually not over. The criminal case is over, but there is still, as you mentioned, a review going on about this particular drunk driving case and why it fell apart and whether the conduct or perhaps misconduct of any of the parties involved here, including the Crown prosecutor who had the case and her then boyfriend, the police officer who actually was the breast technician and wasn't called as a witness. There is an out-of-province independent review still going on to determine what went wrong in this case. This involved the death of a 12-year-old boy who was struck by a car as he walked down a dark highway in Manitoba. So still more to this story in the months ahead.
Mike McIntyre is here, and we're talking crime stories. And I want to get your thoughts on Ann Coulter. Now, this isn't a crime story, although there is a criminal element and some accusations that have been thrown both ways. Of course, Ann Coulter, the conservative big mouth from the States who makes a living going around spouting off, so to speak. I'm actually a fan, and I was amazed but not shocked on how the reaction was to her in Canada, Ottawa one way, and out in Calgary she was probably bought a beer. It's interesting.
I guess
it shows
to see the very different makeup of cultures even within two different provinces, and in this case two different universities. But you know, I'm a lot of what Ann Coulter says to me is obviously, I think, offensive. I mean, it's what she does, though. And I can name a lot of people who I find offensive at times. But, you know, look, she's doing this to shock and to promote herself her brand, her product. I don't know how much she actually believes of what she spouts,
yeah.
But at the end of the day, this still is a free country, and I think perhaps what happened in Ottawa did not reflect very well on at least a segment of Canada in terms of being an open and free country and freedom of speech. We do have hate crime legislation in this country. I certainly didn't see any evidence that Ann Coulter violated that. Yes, bad taste, absolutely. Comments that many of us would find very uncomfortable and certainly wouldn't agree with. But, I don't know that she violated any law, and I think had she violated a law, you know, there would have been some action taken. And I just think that the Ann Coulters of the world, I mean, they're part of what make the world go round. And she certainly succeeded if her mission was to come to Canada and cause a stir. And that's what she does. That's who she is. And in that regard, her visit to Canada, I'm sure she's looking at it as a tremendous success.
Absolutely. And when you look at it, and I guess I ask you the question not only from the hate crimes perspective, but as a media person and as a journalist yourself, the perception in the American media, especially on the cable news shows, is that Canada does not have a freedom of speech provision, but we do have the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and we certainly do.
Oh, absolutely. And, certainly discrimination, racism, that isn't tolerated, nor should it be tolerated. But, Ann Coulter knows what buttons to push. She knows how to create a buzz. And obviously there is a segment of the population, a very large segment, that finds her entertaining, that finds her informative, that agrees with her. She had, big crowds out wherever she went, and obviously she has her supporters, and I guess I'd like to think that in the year 2010 that we can be tolerant of all voices and all views. You don't have to agree with them, but certainly I think people do have a right to express themselves, obviously within the limits of the law. And as I say, I don't see that any laws were broken, and yet, I think a lot of people acted like some laws had been broken.
Yep, it was a big game, I think, for her and for many others. So Mike McIntyre is here for another 3 or 4 minutes. I want to get your thoughts, Mike, on we're both hockey fans. I'm not a big TV movie guy, but I got to admit, I watched the story about Don Cherry the last couple of nights on CBC, and I thought it was great. There's a guy who himself has been ridiculed for many, many years as far as his views, his opinions. He's been accused of hate speech, you name it. But I thought the CBC, who have been very critical of Don Cherry in the past, although he's one of their biggest ratings grabs, did a good job with this. Did you get to see it?
I did, and selfishly for a couple of reasons. I actually had a couple friends who had cameos in the movie.
Yeah.
A good buddy of mine actually played the Boston Bruins goalie.
Wow.
He had about 20 seconds of airtime on Monday night's the second half of it, and then I actually have a friend who works in radio who actually played one of the reporters who gets to fire questions at Don Cherry in the movie when he's announced as the Bruins coach. For those who don't know, the movie was shot in mostly in Winnipeg.
Right.
The whole movie was shot in Manitoba, but most of it was shot in Winnipeg. And when it was shot last year, there were opportunities. They were looking for some extras here and there. So that was kind of neat, seeing them and seeing the sights of the city and that sort of thing. But no, I thought it was a very good job. And looked, Don Cherry, much like Ann Coulter, I suppose, says things sometimes that people don't agree with. He gets people talking. And I think in many ways, he's probably a rating smash. I know as a kid, I used to still, I love watching Hockey Night in Canada. I still do. I used to always be curious to hear what Don Cherry would have to say. And now, 25 years later, I'm still interested to hear what Don Cherry has to say. And I tune in whenever I can on Saturday nights to make sure I can catch whatever rant he's going to have.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it humanized him, his story, his family. I've read his book, and a lot of the movie was his book. Actually, I looked for you. I thought maybe I'd see you in a cameo on that.
No cameos for me, although I was a goalie for my minor hockey league career. Emphasis on the word minor. And so I suppose I could have stood into that role, but my my good buddy Doug did a wonderful job of playing the goalie. In fact, and he was a goalie himself. He said he was a blast, to, especially to throw on the old time equipment and the old mask. He had a lot of fun. Although it shows how the movie business works. I think he spent about 14 hours on set that day, and at the at the end product, he had about 20 seconds of screen time. So a lot of work and little reward, but he's happy and I'm happy.
Well, yeah, and CBC did a great job with it. The radio show is called Crime and Punishment. It's on Sundays on the Corus and Rolco radio networks. And, of course, Mike's webpage is mikeoncrime.com. Thanks again, sir.
Always a pleasure. Take care.
Well, take care. Okay, bye-bye. That's Mike McIntyre, and it's always nice to have him come on. I get to guest on his program now and then, which I did last Sunday, and he gets to come on mine, and we talk about a little bit of everything. This is the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. My name's Dana Pretzer. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of ScaredMonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.